You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Pat Kreitlow, all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild, co-hosting with Angela Lang, as we have been all week. Pat's on vacation, and he'll be back soon. And it's been a pleasure and honor to be able to be with you. You can join this conversation, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC, as we're broadcasting all across the Civic Media Radio Network. We're trying to get Dave Zirin on the show, and we'll keep trying to get him on, and if he doesn't come on, you can just call us up and you can get on the show and talk with me and Angela about what's on your mind. Angela, it was great hearing there from Representative Francesca Hong and the amazing work she's doing in the legislature. And it's a different kind of concept of legislating, or of being a legislator, because she has one of being an organizer. And Christian Phelps, who we talked to earlier this week, also had the same conception of their role. They're in the minority. They recognize they're in the minority. They recognize they can't get some very well-meaning pieces of legislation passed, and yet they're still trying to raise the important issues of the day and represent people and the needs of the people of Wisconsin. So that's what I admire about the work that they're both doing.
I think that came across very clear in Fran's analysis and kind of how she thinks about the work and building the work. And I always tell people, because I'm like, you know, when you do this work a long time, you know a lot of elected officials. I may not like every single elected official that I know and have a relationship with, but I tell people that it's always very clear, as a dang near lifelong organizer at this point, it's very clear who has like an organizing perspective and an organizing background and view their role through the lens of organizing. And those are the ones that I love dearly and I get along with the most. And it's always very obvious how people show up. And I think one of many things I love about Francesca is that she leads with like such energy and compassion. And you can tell it's palpable, her love for her community, her people, but like all of Wisconsin. And she just wants everyone to thrive, right? She wants everyone to be heard. And her and Christian and other folks and, you know, Darren, and I could name a whole group of folks. That is, I think, very clear through their passion. And, you know, we talked about Congressman Mark Pocan and Senator Tammy Baldwin. Like, this is how we need to continue to show up, especially when people feel frustrated by, you know, politicians. As Fran said, she was like, people have no reason to trust politicians right now. How many elected officials do you hear say that and understand that point? And I think her heart always lies with the people, which is why I think her and some of her colleagues stand out, especially in this particular moment.
And they're not afraid to let people know what their politics are. That's one of the great things about them. They're right up front, for instance, with the Economic Bill of Rights that she was talking about, or the fact that they formed a Democratic Socialist Caucus there. They're not afraid to say, this is what we stand for, this is what our constituents needs are, and we're going to advocate for those constituents and their needs. You can call us Democratic Socialists if you want. Bernie Sanders has stood by that label his whole career, hasn't heard him one bit. And so you got to admire that. You got to admire the courage of their convictions and the way that they're going about being a representative, even though they're not in the majority. Because, you know, when Representative Hong was running the first time, I asked her once, I think maybe on the Civic Media Radio Network, why in the world are you going to do that? You're going to be banging your head against the wall for, you know, every minute you're in that building. But she and Representative Phelps have a different conception, which is so interesting to see in action, isn't it?
I would argue that her colleagues need to take a cue from how these representatives are showing up. Their leadership, their compassion, And I'm going to go as far to say, and I don't know if some folks would disagree with me or not, I would also say that there are some Democrats that could take a cue from Reps Phelps and Hong. And those are just two examples that we just had on this week. But I think that there are some other folks in the Dem caucuses that could really take a cue, because I'm seeing this like split, this divide in the Dem Party versus, you know, the more moderate type folks and the socialists or progressives. And it's really just about like showing up for people. And I think some folks are frustrated at Democrats because they're not seeing that happen. And so, yes, Republicans can take a cue, but I would also say that even some Democrats in the state, some of her own colleagues should be taking a cue of how folks are moving and uplifting these issues and centering people right now.
Yeah, and we need our elected officials, our Democrats, to be more outspoken. We saw that with Representative Bocan and Senator Baldwin going after RFK Jr. yesterday, and we played part of that in the first hour, and how refreshing it was to hear our own Congress people really putting it to them. And we have models. We have models. You know, this is what bothers me sometimes when people say all politicians are horrible. I love Representative Francesca Hong. I think she's doing a great job. So when you say all politicians are horrible, what are you really talking about? I love the work that Representative Mark Pocan does. I love his outspokenness, for instance, on the issue of Gaza. He's been one of the most outspoken representatives in Congress on the atrocities that the Israeli government's been doing in Gaza. And so, I don't like those generalizations. And I think they are kind of destructive of our of a Democratic politics, small d, because once you say, you know, all, or once you agree with the generalization that all politicians are X, I mean, it's going to, you know, there's going to be so much cynicism about politics, period, that we're not going to make the change that we need to. And we do have good representatives here in Wisconsin. And we interviewed two in the past couple days, and we played excerpts from two other good representatives today in Congress. So, yeah, that's just, of course, and as an old editor, I hate generalizations. I hate categorical statements like all, any statement that starts all things is going to be, is almost guaranteed to be a falsehood and easily rebuttable. And so why would you want to say something that is so easily proven to be not true? And so that's just a, you know, it's kind of a sloppy way to talk or a sloppy way to write that we try to correct as editors or as people who are careful with language. You can join the conversation, 855-752-4842. Tony Zimmerman has joined the conversation through texting saying, did Senator Markline have a nanny he didn't like growing up, so now he's gutting child care for everyone? And he also loved Representative Francesca Hong. She just flat out called Republicans at the State House cowards, Tony Zimmerman says. So you two can—
More of that, please.
Yeah, weigh in. Yeah, I like the frankness about that. And yeah, they're cowards because they don't want to buck Speaker Voss, King Voss, as they call him in the Capitol. And in part because of the campaign finance rewrite that they did themselves in 2015 to give— people who are in positions of authority in the Capitol to have more and more power from getting money from the super rich and the corporations, and then they can just hold it over people's heads like a sword and make people jump when they say jump.
I mean, it's always been clear that Republicans, one, don't want to listen to anyone that is outside of their own agenda, and I think Robin Voss is a shining example of that. As we mentioned, right, he's effective in the fact that he's able to unite his party, and anyone that even steps half a centimeter outside of the line, there is talk of a primary challenge or any type of retaliation. And I say that's effective. I don't like it, but it's effective. And it's clear that if there is this level of disregard for the will of the people, and I think we can say this on a broad level, like, we need more folks to call it out. I think that's also been a theme today with even Pastor Lanier of, like, even interpersonally, those jokes, we can't let slide. Those offensive comments, we can't let slide. Republicans not listening to the will of the people should not also let that slide. And I understand especially, you know, under, you know, terrible gerrymandered maps, it felt like you were hitting your head against a wall because you're like, I'm organizing, I have more people than they do. But because they, you know, had the maps drawn the way that they didn't need to listen to that. And I think at some point, and we're seeing it now, people are only going to accept, you know, certain things before people start to say, no, this is wrong. And I think folks like Rep Hong being able to bring people together and have people not feel so alone, especially in like rural communities as well, saying, hey, I hear you. You know, there are some folks in Milwaukee that feel similarly. I think she's trying to bridge these divides and really bring that people power out, because especially in this political landscape, it is very lonely, scary, and isolating if you are the only one challenging the status quo, knowing potentially the consequences of what could happen these days. People get basically kidnapped off the street. But when you're building strength in numbers, and I learned this through union organizing, is that it's a lot harder, right, to retaliate against 30, 40 people all saying the same thing and you're outnumbered. And I feel like that's something that she's also trying to do. And I appreciate her being so candid and honest. And we need more of that, so the burden doesn't always constantly fall on her.
I think that's what she was referencing when she said, you know, we've got to do this politics, even though the fascists are at our doors.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a stark way of putting it. And I wanted to ask her a little bit more on that because, you know, that's the situation we're in here in our democracy. We had Jeff Mandel of Law Forward talking about it. You and I have been talking about it all week. I mean, this is the question before us, you know, is our democracy going to survive if Trump keeps going in the direction he's going, which is an authoritarian direction? We talked about it with Jeff Mandel about whether Trump is going to completely ignore U.S. Supreme Court rulings or other federal judge rulings. And he's, to my mind, done it already. And so, you know, we're rapidly going down that hill. And yet you have, you know, Francesca Hong making the point that, you know, we got to stand up and fight against the fascists at our door and work on telling people what a different agenda would be, an agenda that actually would help people in their day-to-day. I'm reminded of the comment that Bill Fletcher Jr. made on our show with us earlier in the week that capitalism has failed people and they're suffering in their day-to-day lives, but rather than having those that economic situation improved, rather than looking at, you know, who is making out like bandits and running our economy that's making you not be able to pay rent or pay your insurance or pay your car insurance or whatever, they're blaming, you know, immigrants. They're scapegoating again, which is just the traditional authoritarian fascist move. But that's the situation. And that's why Francesca Hong's Economic Bill of Rights is so important, because here's a different way we can solve your problems. Rather than scapegoating, we can actually address your day-to-day concerns so that you're going to be able to have health care, you're going to be able to have child care, you're going to have a decent living wage. You know, that's what's going to come out of this. Are we going to go in that direction with Francesca Hong and the Economic Bill of Rights, or are we going to continue to go down this steep hill with Donald Trump and authoritarianism?
Yeah, I mean, and I think, you know, I could just keep really focusing about how, like, the people power, right, in all aspects, what does that look like to come together, to build, to think inward, but, you know, thinking about the hope that Pastor Lanier had kind of left us with is that we've been through things like this before as, you know, communities, you know, it's in our DNA in some ways, even though I maybe personally haven't experienced it before, it's still something that I think is hopeful when we all come together.
And I liked what he said, you know, we've been here before with less resources. I mean, we have the ability to organize. We have the ability to communicate. We have the ability to get together and express ourselves in ways that we didn't have before. So that was the great message from Pastor Lanier. And we'll be right back here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. I'm Matt Rothschild. She's Angela Lang. We're co-hosting the show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hey, welcome back to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow all across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild, co-host with Angela Lang. And as promised, we do have Dave Zirin here as a guest. Dave is the sports columnist for The Progressive in the Nation and runs the podcast Edge of Sports. He is a tremendous political sports columnist, the best in the country. He's been also leading the fight on social media against Trump and fascism, to my mind, really indispensable stuff. Dave Zirin, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, and I come with very happy news. I know these are incredibly difficult times, but I'm going to say something that I know is going to mean a lot to Matt. I'm going to assume it's going to mean a lot to you, Angela, even though we're new friends. And that's I just finished the first draft of my first non-sports book, and it's my 12th book, and it is a biography of the historian Howard Zinn. It's the first time I've ever stepped outside the sports realm to write a book, and I'm only sharing that with you because I think the politics of Howard Zinn, the author of A People's History of the United States, who passed away in 2010, who Trump does speeches about on the White House lawn as a symbol of everything that's wrong with our education system. And of course, he talks about Howard like he's still alive. The way, remember, he used to talk about Frederick Douglass. He's doing great work. I mean, this is we overestimate this man's intelligence and cunning at times. I'm just going to say that. But it's just to say that I think the kind of political grounded optimism that Howard Zinn represented. He wasn't a pie in the sky guy. He looked at the facts, but his starting point was always not who was in the White House, as he liked to say. It's not who's sitting in the White House, it's who's sitting in. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not to say that he thought who was in the White House was irrelevant, but his starting point for understanding the world was always struggle, was always how are people organizing themselves and what is the potential of that kind of organization, because he saw gold dust in every march, in every sit-in, in every demonstration. He knew that not everyone would lead to a mass movement, but he also knew that that's how mass movements start. So I just wanted to share that with you all because these are very difficult times. And I'm not saying the good news is that I wrote a book. That would be very sad. But I am saying that there are politics out there that we can turn to, even in the most difficult times, that I do think show a path out of this morass.
Dave Zirin, thanks and congratulations on getting that first draft done. I've written a couple books myself. Books are hard to write. They're long and arduous. And, you know, I like instant gratification. That's why I used to like writing op-eds, which I could do in about an hour and a half. My book is a whole different ball of wax. Mm-hmm. And Howard Zinn is a really important voice to lift up. Of course, as you mentioned, Trump wants Howard Zinn in A People's History of the United States banned from every college and high school in the country.
The great sin of Howard Zinn, and I say this as someone who's married to a high school history teacher, the great sin of Howard in the eyes of these folks is that young people who are alienated from history, young people who do not like school, young people love Howard Zinn. And you hear this from teacher after teacher, whether they're left wing, right wing. I spoke to right wing teachers who were like, yeah, this is the only thing I can get my kids to read. Because it captures people. And if there's one thing that this government, this regime wants more than anything, it's historical ignorance. And I don't have to preach chapter and verse to your listeners about this, from the books being taken out of the libraries, to the attacks on higher education, to what is and isn't being allowed to read. You can read books about the Nazi Party in our libraries. You can read Mein Kampf, but don't try to read about Rosa Parks. I mean, it's the educational equivalent of letting all the Afrikaners into the country while you hold off on people who are not, white supremacists. I mean, it's part of an agenda of accepting what in the past we would have found unacceptable and trying to normalize a whole period of history that we thought we had gotten over. And the only way you can really do that is by making people ignorant of the history itself, ignorant of injustice, ignorant that every good thing that we, and by we, I mean working people, black, white, brown, the good things that we have in this country had to be fought for. And that's exactly what they don't want us to know or think about or generalize from. So in that regard, it was an honor to write the book. The hope is that people will read it. I know, big shock, because I do think that there is a politic there that we desperately need right now.
And what Trump is doing with education, I just want to alert the listener that the term you're going to hear is patriotic education. That is the term they use. We need patriotic education. But what they mean by patriotic education is a literal whitewashing of our history. And we can't let them sneak that phrase into the lexicon or down our throats, for that matter, or down our kids' throats in high school and college. We need people to be able to access Howard Zinn and A People's History of the United States and a whole bunch of other, you know, radical pro-democracy literature and history and politics that is out there to be studied and learned from.
Very well put. Absolutely. You know, Malcolm X said that there is no area of study more rewarding or more important than that of history. And when you think of the denigration of history, in you know, partly because, you know, they don't do it in standardized tests. History is not a part of that. And so some of that is people have to understand that the teaching to the test mentality in too many public schools really has a nefarious underpinning about issues like IQ and racial bias and, frankly, eugenics. And people, please understand, I'm not a conspiracy theory on this. The creators of the SAT, for example, IQ tests, very influenced by eugenics. So Zinn represents the counter to that. I'll just leave it there.
All right, please hang on after the break. We'd love to have you on for a few more minutes. Dave Zirin is with us on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. All across the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Matt Rothschild, joined by Angela Lang. We've been co-hosting all week and enjoying it more than we should have, probably. Phone number 855-752-4842 for your calls or texts. And we have Dave Zirin with us for just a few more minutes. He's the sports columnist at The Nation and The Progressive and runs the podcast Edge of Sports. Dave, you just wrote something for The Nation about Pete Rose. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, Pete Rose, who passed away in August at age 83, has been taken off the Major League Baseball disciplinary list, which sounds a lot like Animal House's double secret probation. And he is now eligible, the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball history. He is eligible for the Hall of Fame. Now, this is something that I've been writing about for decades because I've been of the belief of, well, of course he belongs in the Hall of Fame. He may be a miscreant. He may have a horrible, like, revolting personal life, but he may have gambled on baseball. But he is the hit leader, and if we're really going to go over the moral failings of everybody in the Hall of Fame, there are a couple of Ku Klux Klanners you might want to kick out of there too. So that has always been my perspective. But there's such a thing as doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. And let's be clear right now. We have to be clear about this. No matter what, whether we think Pete Rose in the abstract deserves to be in the Hall of Fame or not, we need to be clear about a couple of things. The first is that Pete Rose primarily is being put in the Hall of Fame after his death because he now serves in death as a symbol for what Major League Baseball wants. And that's the whole-scale takeover of the legal gambling industry of baseball. And anybody who's watched a game knows exactly what I'm talking about. They're in six different partnerships with different now legalized gambling corporations, and they see this as their way to replace an aging fan base with young people, because they do have an aging fan base. But instead of trying to figure it out by, say, funding youth baseball programs in our cities, instead what they're doing is investing time, energy, and funds in building partnerships with these gambling corporations. They want young people to grow up to be bookies, not grow up to be Major League Baseball players. They see the future around this kind of activity. Now, the problem with this is that it is utterly morally bereft. If anybody who's read the study knows, as I have read the studies, is that young people can't handle gambling. Forget about the financial risks. We're talking frontal lobe of the brain. We're talking decision making. We're talking impulse control. The gambling hotlines since the legalization took place a few years back and the apps exploded. The gambling hotlines are just exploding with young people who are in desperate straits. And Major League Baseball, that used to be their one ironclad principle. No gambling on the games. Mm-hmm. So why are they dispensing with this principle? One reason, of course, as I said, is gambling. It's also because Donald Trump lobbied for it. And we need to look at that in this context as well. Because Pete Rose, I'm just going to say it right now, is a sexual criminal. I mean, the evidence of Pete Rose and statutory rape is all over the place. It was something he denied. And let me just tell you, his denial was saying, no, she just turned 16. And that's what I always kept my eye on as to the age of consent in Ohio. So, you know, we're talking about he's making this excuse about relationships when he was in his, 30s. So this is not a good person. But guess what? Donald Trump is also an alleged statutory rapist. And there is this thing about Trump, and we've seen this over and over again, where he wants both opponents and fellow Republicans to wallow in his own moral degeneracy. Because what that does is it then makes them complicit in that degeneracy. Mm-hmm. And then once you're complicit, you have no choice but to defend him and be on his side, because it's about defending yourself. It's an old trick. You know the expression, if you roll around in the mud with the pig, guess what? You're both muddy. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a situation like Mike Johnson yesterday being asked what he thinks about the Qatari jet and him saying, oh, I'm going to stay in my lane. That was his line. I'm going to stay in my lane and not comment on it. It's like, hello, the issue of emoluments, forgive my pronunciation, is actually the issue of the Congress. Mm-hmm. So what he's doing is actually renouncing his oversight over whether or not the president can receive a $400 million jet from a government that's utterly hostile to democracy and the rights of marginalized people across the board. But they have money. Ooh, do they have money? So this is the problem in which we live, the Pete Rose thing. So now everybody who celebrates Pete Rose and they're doing a celebration in Cincinnati, well, then you become complicit to who this person is. And everybody gets to be a degenerate together, and then nobody has the moral high ground to ever criticize Trump. That's his strategy anyway. A lot of people are pushing back against Rose because of, you know, this is, you know, maybe it is the right thing for him being in the hall. It's utterly, utterly for the wrong reasons. And that's the part of it that we actually need to address.
Dave, we're speaking with Dave Zirin. You know, Trump is inuring us to degeneracy, to corruption. I read something earlier this morning on the air from Ruth Ben-Ghiat talking about corruption is a central element of authoritarianism. You know, it's a way to corrupt people into obeying with you, and then just to, you know, take the whole thing down with you. And that's what Trump is doing. And so just briefly, we only have about a minute or two left with you, Dave. Talk about the resistance. You mentioned it briefly. I want you to expand a little on it.
Well, I mean, I can only speak, and I think everybody, frankly, should have this approach, is I can only speak about what's 10 feet in front of my face with authority. And I think if all of us were looking for ways to resist this administration, not by looking at global dynamics, not by looking at the great political fights that are facing this country, but looking at the way those fights, whether it's around Palestine or healthcare or education, is to look 10 feet in front of our face. Try to find who is organizing in our community, in the community where you live, and practice solidarity with those people. Mm. You know, it's like, I think it's so easy to be overwhelmed. And of course, we know that that's part of their strategy. You flood the zone with crisis, people don't know where to start. Quick example, talking to my neighbor, and she was out doing an ice watch, trying to see like when, because ice has been coming into our community. And so she was alerting people, immigrant organizations, when ice was coming in. She said, "You should come with me." I said, "Oh, but it's the 1 year anniversary since the encampments were violently removed from the universities. So there's going to be a rally about that. So I'm going to that." And she said to me, "Oh, I'm so upset I can't be there. I feel like such like I'm not doing my part." And I said to her, "You're about to go out and spy on ice.
Yeah.
You're doing your part." But I think sometimes people can feel that way, that because there's so much, you actually feel inadequate to the tasks. And that's just human. And frankly, it's the human, it's the best human part of us. I would just argue that people got to look in front of their face, see what's there, and work on that. Mm-hmm. And then see what you can work from that. Because otherwise, I fear that we get caught in analysis paralysis. Mm.
Dave Zirin, great advice. Thanks for being our guest. We all need to do our part where we are. Do your part where you're at. Join a group that's standing up to Trump's authoritarianism, whether it's attacking immigrants or whether it's education policy, whatever it is, stand up to it. We need everyone to stand up. Dave Zirin, thanks so much, my friend.
Thank you. And just real quick, media blackouts aside, I promise you there is activism happening in your area because it is happening everywhere right now. You got to find it. Because the media, not y'all, but we know what I'm talking about. The corporate media is not going to do that job for you. They're not a movement job placement organization.
Yeah, we'll try
to
alert.
Be our job.
Yeah, we try on civic media to alert people to protests that are going on in the state right here. So take care, Dave. We'll be in touch.
Thank you.
Great to meet you, Angela.
You too.
Now we're joined by Nick Ramos, who is the executive director at the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Full disclosure, I used to have that job. Nick Ramos, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning to you. It's a great day, Matt. It's a great day, Angela. How are you guys doing?
You know, best as we can, hanging out, talking to you.
Nick, it's a big day for you in the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Let our listeners know.
Yeah. Well, it's a big day because the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign turns 30 today, which 30 years ago, my God, 1995, what a time to be alive. I mean, we had Mighty Morphin Power Rangers on TV. Anyways, so in all seriousness, gang, I mean, to watch any organization be able to celebrate 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of existence, it really is a testament to the work product, but also the people that believe in the thing. And like in 30 years, we've had 4 executive directors, and it's crazy to think that on this call, we have two of them sitting here right now. But, you know, we've just been trying to do all the great work in coalition and with the grassroots folks across Wisconsin around money and politics, around, you know, trying to end partisan gerrymandering once and for all, to actually have a government that works for the people instead of, you know, the most wealthiest amongst us. And so we get to celebrate 30 years of highs, 30 years of lows, but really thinking about how we can celebrate another 30-year birthday and 60 years. And so we're just doing everything we can to show all the love to the supporters, but all the great work that we've been able to do together as one. And so I'm so excited.
And where is the event happening and what time?
So we are going to be at the prestigious Eastside Club in Madison. And I say that, you know, sarcastically, but like the Eastside Club does have some history and the music there is bumping. And we wanted it to be in a place that felt comfortable because this is going to be, you know, you see all these galas that happen in the nonprofit world or like in like the voting rights space, and no shade on any of that stuff, but like, galas can feel kind of stuffy type, but so this is more about like the people's gala. It's about coming as you are. It's about just wanting to be in community with folks. And so we're going to be kicking that puppy off tonight, I believe at 6:00. And so I think we're a capacity gang, but you know, we're not going to turn away people. If you show up, like, you know, you are more than welcome to be in community with all of us, but it's going to be a happening crowd. And we got some civic media folks. I believe Dan Schaefer is going to be co-hosting. We have Kristen Bry, you know, a staple and a just delight to be around here in Wisconsin. And so a lot of fun and a lot of things you haven't seen from this organization.
Well, yeah, shout out to Dan.
Yeah, it's great. Hey. Dan Schaefer is going to be there, and Kristen's a real treat as well. Mm-hmm. Angela Lang and I are going to be there. And so,
oh my God.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun little party. So that's the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign celebrating 30 years. It's done more than I think any other organization in the state to fight for campaign finance reform and to ban gerrymandering. Nick Ramos, congratulations, and we'll be seeing you later tonight.
And I can't wait to see you guys.
Yes, congrats.
We'll be right back on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. I've got a poem and a bird song for you.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow across the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. Angela Lang and I have been hosting the Pat Kreitlow Show for the last 4 days, really enjoying the opportunity to do this. I want to thank Pat for allowing us to do it and the other folks at Civic Media having confidence in our ability to carry it off. I hope we've carried it off. It's been quite a week, Angela.
It has, and I'm just so grateful to be able to, one, share this experience with you because we always have a good time, but to, you know, also be able to have a platform to dig into some of these issues and just... deeply, deeply honored for the folks at Civic Media. And I said this to Jane. I was like, it's a big responsibility to feel that you're entrusting us with your show for a few days. And I don't take that lightly. And I think, you know, all of the listeners, and looking forward to the next time.
Yeah, likewise. Me too. I want to thank all our guests we've had on this week, but especially the guests today and this packed morning that we had, Pastor Lanier and Jeff Mandel and Representative Francesca Hong and Dave Zirin and Nick Ramos. It was great listening to all of them. They all had great things to offer. Well, I want to thank Greg Bach and Sam Davis and our great producers who've helped us along. And terrific always working with you, Angela. Couldn't do it without you. So every time I get a call, I give you a call. And it's just great fun to be able to work with you. It's kind of a it seems so easy and natural as a pairing. You know, in the last segment of every show, I tried to bring some beauty through birdsong and poetry. So yesterday I was describing a red-eyed vireo and the hunt I had for it up north in Bark Point one day when I was looking for this bird at the top of the trees that would never move. And finally, I found it. It was singing this beautiful song, and Sam's going to play that song for us right now. Isn't that great? It just goes on and on too.
I feel like at one point I heard tweet tweet.
Yeah, it's just 30 seconds, and it's one of the most notable songs in the summer because birds sing in the springtime. They give their spring song for mating purposes and territory purposes. But this bird will sing all summer long, and it's just a crazy thing. And it's a hard bird to see. It's not the most beautiful bird in the whole world, but it's got a really beautiful song. That's the red-eyed vireo. You can see it all over Wisconsin, really nests all over the state, but especially up north. So keep your eye out for that. And then as far as poetry, I was thinking of which poem to end with. And then I remembered the conversation we had yesterday with Brittany Merlot, the prize-winning meteorologist of Civic Media, who warns us that there may be hail today. Hail could be the size of a tennis ball even in some places, which is frightening. And it'll do damage to your windshield, do damage to your windows, do damage to your roof. So I stumbled upon a poem called Hailstones by Seamus Heaney, the great Irish poet who died a few years ago, who was famous for the line, once in every lifetime, a tidal wave of justice rises up and hope and history rhyme, which is just a great stanza there. Hope and history rhyme. I want each of us to think of when has hope and history rhymed in our lifetime. Maybe when Nelson Mandela came out of jail. Maybe when Barack Obama was arrested. When Barack Obama became president. Maybe, there was a crazy slip. Maybe when I felt a little bit that way when Tammy won the first time. You know, these were kind of historical events. But hope and history rhyme. They're not rhyming right now. They're clanging. So, but there are times, and this is, you know, Pastor Lanier reminded us, there are times, when things get better. So here's the first couple stanzas of a poem called Hailstones by Seamus Heaney. My cheek was hit and hit. Sudden hailstones pelted and bounced on the road. When it cleared again, something whipped and knowledgeable had withdrawn and left me there with my chances. I made a small, hard ball of burning water running from my hand, just as I make this now out of the melt of the real thing, smarting into its absence. I just love that. I love Seamus Heaney. And, you know, it raises the question, what are the things that get us through really difficult periods? And for me, it's poetry. For me, it's birds. For me, it's my wife, Jean, and our friends. And for me, it's also participating in protests. Like Dave Zirin said, I went to a couple anti-Trump protests, immigrant rights protests. I know there are great protests going on right now in Milwaukee in support of Judge Dugan. He's right. We need to join these efforts wherever we are, or join an effort that your religious group may be doing to help out immigrants in your community, or help out childcare centers, for instance. You know, we need to demand of our elected officials that we get the help that we need, but the way we get the help that we need is through a collective action, through protest in the streets. That's what Howard Zinn taught us, and Dave Zirin's just coming out with a book on Howard Zinn. And I know, Angela, that's what you've been doing as an organizer your whole adult life here. I mean, we really need to do the activism, because it's the activism that's going to save our democracy. Angela, what's your last thought here?
I think, what I'll say too is that, you know, hand in hand with activism is the education. And I think sometimes people are like, I don't know how to get active, or I don't know much about the issue. That's okay. We all didn't come into this movement having the views that we hold now. Everyone starts somewhere. Just take that time to dig deep, to educate yourself, to talk to folks that are directly impacted by these issues and get different perspectives. So I think now is the time for all of us to be a little uncomfortable, to grow and to learn. And then we can show up as well, too.
And we can do more education, too, here on Civic Media. And you can get that and entertainment coming up next with Matinair on Air. You got Jane Matinair and the great Greg Bach. So stay tuned for that. And thanks again for allowing Angela and me to be with you these last four mornings. It's been our pleasure, our privilege.
Thank you.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.